ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नश्च प्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Do we have a verse number? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. You did 28? So it's number 29? 29. It's on page 56. Iti ragnya upadishya viprajata takovida labdha pachitaya sarve prati jagmu swakan grahan iti ragnya upadrisha viprajata takovidaha labdha pachitaya sarve prati jagmu swakan grahan. Iti ragna upadrisha viprajata takovidaha labdha pachitaya sarve pratijagmu svakan grahan. Iti ragna upadisha viprajata takovidaha labdha pachitaya sarve pratijagmu svakan grahan. Iti ragnya upadisya viprajata takovidaha labdha pachitaya sarve pratijagmu svakan grahan. Iti ragnya upadisya viprajata takovidaha labdha pachitaya sarve pratijagmu svakan grahan. Iti, thus, ragne, unto the king, upadishya, having advised, vipra, persons well versed in the Vedas, jatatakovidaha, persons expert in astrology and in the performance of birth ceremonies, labdha apachitayaha, those who had received sumptuously as remuneration, sarve, all of them, pratijagmu, went back, swakan, their own, grahan, houses. Translation: Thus, those who were expert in astrological knowledge and in performance of the birth ceremony instructed King Yudhishthir about the future history of his child. Then, being sumptuously remunerated, they all returned to their respective homes. Please repeat. Thus, those who were expert in astrological knowledge and performance of the birth ceremony instructed King Yudhishthir about the future history of his child. Then, being sumptuously remunerated, they all returned to their respective homes. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Vedas are the storehouse of knowledge, both material and spiritual. But such knowledge aims at perfection of self-realization. In other words, the Vedas are the guides for the civilized man in every respect. Since human life is the opportunity to get free from all material miseries, it is properly guided by the knowledge of the Vedas in the matters of both material needs and spiritual salvation. The specific intelligent class of men who were devoted particularly to the knowledge of the Vedas were called the Vipras, or the graduates of the Vedic knowledge. There are different branches of knowledge in the Vedas, of which astrology and pathology are two important branches necessary for the common man. So, the intelligent men, generally known as the Brahmanas, took up all the different branches of Vedic knowledge to guide society. Even the Department of Military Education, Dhanurveda, was also taken up by such intelligent men, and the Bipras, who were also teachers of this section of knowledge, as were Dronacharya, Kripacharya, etc. The word Bipra mentioned herein is significant. There is a little difference between the Vipras and the Brahmanas. The Vipras are those who are expert in karmakanda, or fruit of activities, guiding the human society toward fulfilling the material necessities of life, whereas the Brahmanas are expert in spiritual knowledge of transcendence. This department of knowledge is called jnanakanda, and above this there is the upasana kanda. The culmination of upasana kanda is the devotional service of Lord Vishnu, and when the Brahmanas achieve perfection, they are called Vaishnavas. Vishnu worship is the highest of the modes of worship. Elevated Brahmanas are Vaishnavas engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and thus Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the science of devotional service, is very dear to the Vaishnavas. And as explained in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is the mature fruit of Vedic knowledge and is superior subject matter above the three khandhas, namely karma, jnana, and upasana. Amongst the karma khanda experts, the jataka expert vipras were good astrologers who could tell all the future history of a born child simply by the astral calculations of the time, lagna. Such expert Jataka Vipras were present during the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, and his grandfather Maharaj Yudhishthir awarded the Vipras sufficiently with gold, land, villages, grains, and other valuable necessities of life, which also included cows. There is a need of such Vipras in the social structure, and it is the duty of the state to maintain them comfortably as designed in the Vedic procedure. Such expert vipras, being sufficiently paid by the state, could give free service to the people in general, and thus this department of knowledge could be available for all. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Nena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam tam sajivam sadvetam sadvatutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam sri radha krishna padan sahagana ta shivishakanvitamscha namaum vishnu padaya krishna prashtaya bhutale srimate bhaktivedanta swami nitinamine namaste saraswati deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarne namaum vishnu padaya krishna prashtaya bhutale srimate bhakti siddhanta saraswati tinamine Sri Barshabana Videvi Daitaya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Daine Pravave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Sri Rupanuga Paktida Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Panuka virudhapa siddhanta dvanta harine namo gora kishoraya sakshad vairagya murtaye vipralambara sambode parambu jayate namaha namo bhakti vinodaya sakchidananda namine gora shakti swarupaya rupanuga varayate Gaura virbhava bhomestvam nirdesa sajana priya Vaishnava sarva bhoma shri Jagannathaya te namaha Vanchakalpa vascha kripa sindhu bhya eva cha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Namo mahavaranyaya Krishna prema pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha Pancha Tadvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Avataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatam Surato Pangor Mama Manda Matergati Matsarva Swapadambo Jo Radha Manana Mohano Divya Vrinda Ranya Kalpa Drumadha Srimad Ratnankara Shinghasanastau Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Devo Vrishtalibhi Sevya Manu Smarami Srimad Rashada Sharambi Vamshivata Tatastita Karshan Venu Swanir Gopir Gopinata Shriestunaha The Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindai Tulsi Devyai Priyai Keshavasya Vishnu Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavachai Namo Namaha Sri Nishingha Jai Nishingha Jai Jai Narasingha Prahlada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo nasti papatma naparadi chakashana parihare pilajame kimbruve purushottama yavatinam yata yuni yunam cha yuvatau yata mano binavate tadvan mano me ramatam twayi bhumau skalitabharanam bhumireva balambanam twayi jata pararanam twameva sharanam bravo Govinda Balabe Radhe Prate Tomaham Sada Twariyam Iti Janatu Govindo Mam Twayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadi She Karanam Ritabahani Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasamayam Pradiyatam Dinandabrajastrinam Padarenum Abhikshnasha Yasham Hari Gato Gitam Bunati Bhuvanatrayam Namasrestam manamapi sachi putra matra swarupam shi rupam tasya gajamaruparim maturim goshtavatim radha kundam girivaramoho radhika madhavasham prapto yasya pratitikupaya shri gurum tam natosmi adhanas chidam dante idam jache puna puna shriman rupa padam bojo rajoham syam bhave bhave hantayam ajrabala haridasavaryo yadrama krishna charanasparasha pramodaha manam tanoti sahago kanayostayo yat paniya suyavasakandana kandamulai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Iti Ragna Upadishya Viprajat Kovidaha Labda Pachitaya Sarve Pratik Jagmu Sukangrahan. Thus, those who are expert in astrological knowledge and in performance of the birth ceremony instructed King Yudhishthira about the future history of his child. Then, being sumptuously remunerated, they all returned to their respective homes. This Vedic culture, which is based on taking the authority from the Vedas, and following that authority through the mouths of the Brahmins, the Vipras, the Vaishnavas, is a very merciful society because everyone has, first of all, the Vedas themselves are non-different from Krishna, and they're very merciful. Krishna extends himself to the souls who are reprobate, who are caught because of their own will in one of the species of life in the material world. And he extends himself out of mercy to give them light and direction from any position of life. Therefore, the Vedas are a huge project. They're meant to encompass all of society and all of its different aspects in order that everyone is in an advantageous position to advance. Tamasima Jyotir Gamai. That means everyone should come out of the darkness and into the light. And under the umbrella of the Vedic culture, whatever activities one is performing, eventually those lead one towards the highest position, which is going back home, back to Godhead, and reestablishing one's relationship. And there are many branches of Vedic knowledge. Some of them, many of them, most of them, deal with the activities of maintaining the body under the three modes of material nature. And Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvanvo Nityasattvasto Niryoga Shema Atmavan. He's advising Arjuna to that these, the Vedic texts mostly deal with the three modes of material nature. So he says, be transcendental to these and be established in the self, in this position of self-realization. There are the, in the Vedic divisions, there are the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, the Samhitas, the Upanishads. These have various divisions of knowledge. The Brahmanas, the Samhitas, they're a compilation from any particular Veda of the important verses all put in one place. And the Brahmanas are a section of the Vedas which explain the rituals very clearly. And then the Aranyakas give the esoteric meaning behind the rituals, why they're actually performing the rituals. And in the Vedas, the first transcendental section of the Vedas that we come to, beyond the rituals that allow one to live a balanced life in this world, are the Upanishads. Upanishad means to sit up close. Now it's time to really listen about what your real interest is. And the Upanishads, in very general terms, begin to explain to us the nature of God and our nature as well, by giving us some inkling that we're not part of this world. Just as if someone was in a cave and they were in complete darkness, they couldn't see anything, they're never used to the light. To tell somebody about the sun and the outer world and what's involved, what is the sun? The sun is everything. The sun is watermelons, it's the ocean, It's the sky. Everything is being maintained and can be seen because of the sun. The rain is the sun. Without the sun, there's no rain. And so to go into all that detail all at once is too abrupt. So the Upanishads begin by telling us about Brahman in a way that would resemble a man in a cave who'd never seen the light, never seen the sun, and then you break a little tiny hole through that wall and that you let in one beam of light onto the wall and you say, here, this is light. Oh, look at that. And then you can say there's a whole world of light out there. But gradually, the Upanishads bring us out of the idea that this world is our home, that this is the all in all, and we come to understand what is the hierarchy of importance in this world, and that is consciousness, the soul. Even giving us an inkling that we can look at ourselves to understand God. Therefore, some people misinterpret the Upanishads to think that, oh, I am God, because it says, like unto the sun, as am I. So that must mean I'm it. I am that God. But actually, it's only saying that you look at yourself, you can see a sample of God. We're little samples. And you can see what consciousness must be like if you look inside and observe yourself. What is the nature of consciousness? So all this is descending mercy from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's making all these things available. Then there are, in such a scheme, there are gradations of advancement, and there are the khandhas, the various levels of worship which take place. Some of them have to do with worshiping demigods in order to get some fruit of result. Well, how is that beneficial? Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that such kind of worship is done by less intelligent people. It's a vidipurvakam. It's against the normal course of activities which bring one to a higher level of consciousness, etc., or to the perfection of consciousness. Can be a unwanted detour. But in the Vedas, this section is important because people coming out of the darkness of materialism who begin to worship demigods and get a result start to develop a faith in the Vedas. Because they worship the demigod, and then they get faith, and then they start to think, oh, there's something in all these codes, in this formula. And an overall faith in a superior authority develops through that process, thinking there's something more than just me or just hedonism, and coming out of the life of the animals. And then one comes to higher positions of knowledge, as I mentioned, the Upanishads, of analyzing the difference between matter and consciousness and such, not just interested in fruitive results. And then one comes to the position of worshiping God. And this is the highest kind of worship. There are motivations, various motivations for worshiping God. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions there are four. First and lowest is fear, that I'm afraid. I realize that I'm in a precarious situation, that I've been driving blind on the freeway. I've caused carnage. I've killed. I've maimed. I'm going to owe an insurance for the rest of my life, and therefore I'm afraid that I've caused all this damage due to my ignorance in the material world. This is my implication in karma. And out of fear, I begin to take to the process of worshiping God. And above fear, there's prospect that I might get something in return. And above prospect is duty, sense that this is the right thing to do. Therefore, I'm a servant, therefore I worship. But the highest is love. And similarly, there are gradations of learned scholars mentioned here, the brahmanas, the vipras, the vaishnavas. The vipras generally are mentioned here as those who know the rituals and can perform them. And they do them so well. In a culture where there are divisions of labor and everyone knows their job from the beginning and they learn it from their parents and they take it up, they become so expert. Somebody wrote a book recently in which they, in their study, they said there's a law of 10,000 hours. And that means that they found that those who spend a minimum of 10,000 hours in a particular discipline become a master at it. So if you're wondering why you're not good at something, You might want to check your little notebook and see if you've put in your 10,000 hours yet. if you watch somebody who's very expert at playing an instrument, were they always like that, or did they put in 10,000 hours? If they play it as if it was a part of their own body, they've probably put in their 10,000 hours. So expertise in this Vedic society, we can see these astrologers are coming and they know their business. They can do an inquiry by looking at the lagna, to see the time the person was born, and they can calculate. The laws of the universe are uniform enough so that you can see the influences, and astrologers get empowered. It's not just strictly science, but there's an empowerment, actually, because Krishna's empowering everyone for certain things. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto mattak smitya jnanam apohanam cha, from within the heart. And you watch some of these astrologers, they're very expert. Some in these sciences, which are all kind of related, looking at palms, they can look at your face. Some of the Ayurvedic doctors become so expert, they'll look at you and tell you what your problem is. Now, I saw that just in Vrindavan last time. One of my godbrothers was consulting this Ayurvedic physician, and he had ordered all this medicine. Of course, there was a profit motive, too. He ordered tons of these, you know, Ayurvedic pills and things like that. But he came around. We were sitting at a table taking prasadam, and my friend was saying how expert this doctor was. He said, he can just look at you and tell you what's wrong with you. So he, when the doctor came to the table, he goes, tell him. So each one he looked at, and he goes, oh, you're really... So he looked at me, and he goes, you're in too much anxiety. And I thought, you got that right. You're worrying too much. I was at the time, and probably still am. So there's, anyway, these doctors can become very expert and understand these kinds of things. These branches of material knowledge, probably explained once on a morning walk, that he said, this is not within the realm of transcendence. It's becoming expert at a certain field of knowledge. He said, just like if we're walking down this beach, and I've walked down here so many times, and it's foggy and you can't see where the ocean, if someone says, if you walk 10 paces that way, you'll get wet. And you walk 10 paces and you get wet. And say, oh, you're a great soothsayer. You know everything. I said, no, I've been to this beach 1,000 times. I know there's where you walked. So these branches of knowledge, they become very expert. Vipras, they learn all these rituals and become very expert. And we see in this verse how they come and they give valuable knowledge and insight about the stars that will be influencing the child in a certain way. And how does this help? Well, you know, we have a philosophy in Vaishnavism, tattenu kampam manususamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. We really, our attitude towards everything, our overreaching attitude, and if you look at Bhishma Dev's prayers and the prayers of the bull, Dharma, you'll find that this overarching attitude is that let these obstacles come, whatever it is. This is all God's arrangement to purify me. I leave it in His hands. I'm no longer trying to arrange anything for myself. I'm taking suffering as purification. I take it as a basic premise that Krishna is all merciful, all powerful, and everything He does for me is good. Suridam sarvabhutanam. That's the overarching feeling of the Vaishnava. So once Pradyumna asked Prabhupada, so what is the use of all this astrology? You know, is it in our Vaishnav Siddhanta to go into astrology to figure out what are the influences and such? Prabhupada said, no, it's not in our Siddhanta. He said, however, if you know that it's going to rain outside, you take an umbrella. Yukta Vairagya, you can take some help. Incidentally, in the extreme case of Yukta Vairagya, when I was at the Montreal Rath Yatra, there was one devotee there who was an expert palm reader. And so we had him set up a booth near the book booth. And by far, his is one of the most popular booths because everyone wants to know what's going to happen to me. And, you know, it's good. Come on, tell me, you know. And so he looked at their hand and goes, you need a Bhagavad Gita. So all day long, he'd bring them over to me and he goes, he needs a Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, give me what is it? Bhagavad Gita, give me the book, you know. So astrology can be used in Krishna conscious ways and to understand influences and such. And the Brahmanas are described by Kripacharya as those who are broad-minded. They're open-hearted. They have no vested interest in the world. See, Brahmins are independent. They're meant to be independent. They don't live off of anybody else. If you work for a boss, then you have to do what they say, and you have to do it how they say to do it. And that's not a Brahmana. A Brahmana means that he'll starve rather than work for somebody else. Prabhupada tells the story of a teacher, a Brahmin, that was noted in one of the villages. And he was very poor. He wasn't getting much remuneration or anything because his students were very poor also. But people came to him and offered him some kind of employment and things like that. He said, I'm fine. And what was he eating? He had a little rice, and there was a curry tree there. And he'd take some curry leaves and mix it in the rice, and it was fine. It's good enough. Brahmins maintain their independence above all other things because that allows them to actually speak the truth. If you're indentured, if you must work for someone else and say what they want you to say, and it has to be politically correct, you can't speak the truth. That's why in university systems, there's a system of tenure. You know about this, tenure? Tenure means, Rakshit knows, tenure means that at a certain point, the university says, okay, you're such a good teacher that, I mean, this is how it used to work anyway. It's not as good as it used to be, but it used to be that in tenure, the professor would be given this status, bestowed the status by the university where you can't be fired for any reason. In other words, ideologically, you can say anything you want. You can teach your history class and say whatever you feel like because, you know, they trust you're a high enough scholar and you're valuable enough and attractive to the students and, you know, you can't fire you. Why? Because if they're worried about if I say this or if I say that, I'm fired, they can't really expound on what they really believe. So Brahmanas are like that also. They were meant to be completely independent and not threatened by, you know, some employer who says you can't do it like this or like that. They're independently thoughtful. They were qualified by the mode of goodness. And therefore, their instruction to society and to individuals would be very level-headed, truthful, and beneficial. And if you see, you have the mercy of the Vedas coming down. You have highly trained experts in all the different branches of the Vedas. And then you have these Brahmanas who are open-minded. They have nothing to gain by their instruction. And therefore, there's good guidance in society. Therefore, Prabhupada said that the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement was to create Brahmanas, because that's the part of society that's really missing. We have a lot of doers and people who can make things, but the direction coming from the Vedas is missing. We need the head. The head has to be on the body. So he felt that if even 1% of the population could be trained in these Brahminical principles and independently thoughtful devotees who were following these principles and exhibiting light, you know, from their own practice, they could guide society in a really important way. So that was one of the great projects that Prabhupada, why he introduced the Krishna consciousness movement. And this is still ongoing, that this training is necessary for people to come to this level. And then the highest division of human being is the Vaishnav. The Vaishnav is one who fully understands the purpose of the Vedas. Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yaj gyanam advayam. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. The absolute truth is advaya gyan. He's non-dual, but he's understood in three phases according to how one approaches. Brahman, paramatma, bhagavan. And the Vaishnav is the one who understands the highest the highest feature of God, which is Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of the method of approach, which is through devotional service, through devotional worship. And in that way, Krishna reveals himself. So the Vaishnavas are considered to be the highest, and they can do good to society by keeping alive the real, the essential teachings of the Vedas. Even as they're passed down through disciplic succession, through the enervating plane of the material world, the Vedas become, the teachings become skewed, they're tampered with, they become misdirected, and therefore there needs to be those who understand the very essence of the Vedas and who take those that essence and they teach them to others for their highest benefit. So those are the Vaishnavas in society. And here we get a snapshot in the in this society, and it's very edifying to hear about this, a society in which everyone has their particular expertise. They're well situated in that according to their nature. And there are those that we can go to take advice, to get proper direction in the world and in our lives. And this verse is describing how Parikshit Maharaj says, those who are expert in astrological knowledge and in performance of the birth ceremony instructed King Yudhishthira about the future history of his child. Then being sumptuously remunerated, they all returned to their respective homes. That's something I should mention about remuneration. What does it say in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita about a useless yajna? It's one in which the priest is not remunerated and there's no distribution of prasad. So when you have yajnas and things, these priests are remunerated. The kshatriyas, and they give them wealth. And the students come and they give things to the priests so they can survive and they can remain independent. And that remuneration is very important, as Krishna says in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. If you take the help of somebody like that and then you don't give remuneration, then your yajna is useless because of ingratitude. And Prabhupada mentions in his one of his lectures about gratitude and about how we are debtors. And one of the people, group of people we are debtors to are the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins who give us this knowledge. It's the most important thing we have. We can take it for granted that we have Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, but actually this is the greatest gift. And he says how to pay the debt to these authors that we owe so much to. Veda Vyas. I mean, what would you do to meet Veda Vyas? I think about this sometimes when I'm chanting japa. It's like, I'd like to meet Jagannath Das Babaji. Sometimes I meditate what it would be like. I go to his samadhi. It's there on the other side of the Ganga. It's one of the most celestial places in all of Navadvipa. You take the boat across from Mayapur, and you just get off right at the ghat there, and you go just half a block down and take a right and then another left, go through that gate, and on the other side, his deities are there. It's a lively ashram there. Sometimes you go at night, they'll invite you to, you know, sing in the kirtan, and Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj's samadhi is there, and his bhajan kutir was right there on the Ganga. And you just think, what a great soul. And sometimes when I'm chanting japa, I think I'd like, what it would be like to go and put my head at his feet and just, you know, beg some mercy for the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. He and all the other Vaishnavas, we can meditate like that and take advantage of their mercy coming down to us. So how do we pay them back for this special mercy? Prabhupada says, by distributing the mercy. What makes any author appreciate you more than anything? I can see from modern day authors like Satyaraj Prabhu. He writes all these books, you know. He says, please, you know, could you sell my books at your table? You know, if you sell a few books, he says, thank you very much. Why did he spend so much time writing all this thing if he didn't want it distributed? So authors become very happy when you help distribute their writings. So Prabhupada said, you can pay the debt to Vyasadeva, to Narada Muni, to, you know, the great acharyas by distributing that to others, giving them the opportunity. That way you pay the debt to those great, and you remunerate their efforts, you know, in the best kind of way, then you'll be very happy. So those are a few thoughts about this verse and the context of it. And are there any questions or reflections? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhu, for a wonderful enlivening class. So, like Srila Prabhupada, always whenever this palmistry, so one incident I remembering, like whenever some person comes and tells like, what, and can you tell me about what is my future? Then he tell that this birth, death, old age, and this is, these are the sure in your life. This fourth thing is sure to come. So he was the greatest palmist that he can predict correctly.
And which palmist was that?
Sorry?
Oh, Prabhupada.
Prabhupada, yeah.
Acha.
You were mentioning about tenure and comparing the status that the Brahmins are in to these individuals who are there in universities getting tenure. And recently, when I was attending a orientation session at a major university in Southern California, the dean commented on this tenure for the faculty. And he said that it is not just internal promotion how they are doing. They have to get these supportive letters from outsiders, internationally recognized people, at least 6 or 8 of them before the university will give them tenure. So the significance of that is that, as you were saying, these they have a quality of independence that is to a certain degree demonstrated by how others, the peers, are also looking upon them from outside before their own place will give them tenure.
Mm. Thank you. Nice. Yes, Hansapriya.
I think the last statement you made really touched my heart, as that, you know, the mercy we got from the acharyas, probably just to express our gratitude, we should pass it on.
Yeah. I thought about that once when... Yeah, go ahead, Mayapur. I was at Terakadamba, which is the place where Rupa Goswami did a lot of his bhajan and he did a lot of his writing. And we went to visit. It's a very calm, beautiful, peaceful place in Vrindavan. And it's off the beaten path. So we spent the day there. And then I remember I came back, and at the time I was going out on Sankirtan at the San Francisco airport. And... I just happened to have a large quantity of the nectar of instruction. And I'd just come back from Terakadamba, and I was there behind my booth, and I was distributing books, and I met a Taiwanese student, and he bought a nectar of instruction for $10, and very happy about it, put it in his bag, and he walked off to get on the plane. And as he was walking away, I was thinking about that connection, Terakadamba, Rupa Goswami, writing on a palm leaf, you know, 500 years ago, and now the book somehow it's come passed down, you know, and it's in this form that we can distribute, and from Taiwan, you know, what was Rupa Goswami thinking about, you know, my book's going to Taiwan, but somehow, you know, the student took it, and there's a book in Taiwan now for sure. I know, I mean, there's many there, but then I felt this overwhelming connection with Rupa Goswami. I felt he was in Terakadamba. Somehow I've been giving a service where I can pass on his book. And I felt, well, what is better than that? Who wants another job besides helping Rupa Goswami distribute his book? Can you ask for anything better than that? I don't think so. Mayapur?
Prabhuji, this is a state of my confused mind. You know, when we talk about astrology, the topic that we discussed today, vis-a-vis karma, like, I'm sorry if I'm not able to express it because I'm a little confused. You know, we say that based on our karma is the destiny, and at the same time, a jeev has some independence to, you know, decide his next steps. So, you know, like if someone tells that, okay, you are going to do this, and that means it's somewhere written, you know, based on either on your past karma or whatever, you are going to do this. And then, you know, jeev also has his, an independence now to act in a certain way. So how does the two things fit into it? I mean, it appears like a chicken-egg problem or a apparently contradictory thing. For example, I mean, I'm just trying to be honest with my own opinion. I mean, there was someone who predicted that I'll be living in US, and I used to joke with him, and I used to laugh off with him, and I used to challenge him, no way. And here I am. So was it, you know, I mean, I mean, if that is the case, how can I be blamed for any positives or negatives that may occur because I'm living here? I mean, this is just an example. If it was destined, then what is the independence or what is my own decision, credit or discredit, that may occur as a cause of that decision? And then sometimes it also dawns that we are all just puppets. I don't know. I don't even know if I'm able to clarify the question.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. It's there is a predominant influence that we have from our previous karmas that carries us and that influences us in very powerful ways that we're not even aware of. Those who are unaware of those influences, Krishna says, are very foolish. He says, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvaja hankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate, that the powerful forces of nature are directing you. And he said, those who think they're doing it themselves because of false ego, they're vimudha, they're very foolish. In the 18th chapter, we had this discussion the other night in the Wednesday night Gita class. It's a perennial discussion. How much free will do we have? In the 18th chapter of the Gita, Krishna talks about five factors of action. And for every action, there is the doer, the senses, the endeavor, ultimately the supersoul. And these five factors, Krishna says, one who doesn't consider these five is also doesn't see things as they are. There are many influences, various influences. In general, we are like, as Prabhupada says in the Gita, in his purport, we are like thrown into the middle of an ocean, and we're swimming for it, and trying to paddle our way out in the vast ocean of material nature, and we're overwhelmed by that. And there is a way in which our destiny is sealed on the material side. Sometimes it's compared to if you get on a train in Mumbai and all you could afford was a third class ticket. And you get on the train and you have your third class ticket. That's your ticket. You bought it. That's what you could afford at the time. You got on the train. And now, they're pretty strict over there. Try moving up to the first class cabin and see what happens. They'll put you back, you know. So you've bought your ticket. You have a certain kind of, there are certain parameters that you're held to because of your previous activities on the material side. However, all that changes when you take to devotional service, because your karma and all your destiny and those kinds of things can be altered because of the interdiction, because of Krishna's interdiction into that process when you take to devotional service. And therefore, Narada Muni says, Tasyaiva heta prayateta kovido nalabhite yad brahmatam upariyada. Don't try to get gain that comes on the material side, because it's already set up. There's a ledger there. And you're not going to get more or less happiness than you deserve from that side. He says, try instead for spiritual advancement, because that's unlimited. You can actually excel there based on your free will to surrender to Krishna. In fact, I was just listening this morning to a talk Prabhupada was giving, and it's a repeated theme where Prabhupada says that you can take advantage of this in a second, or you can wait millions of years. He said there's no set formula for how fast you become Krishna conscious. It has to do with your free will. Think about that. I mean, you could take it in a second, or you can wait millions of years. And that is open to you. That door is open, especially in the human form of life. And therefore, Krishna talks about how the karma of the living entity is going on in the material world. He's controlled by that, and that Krishna he's not involved with that equation. That is between the living entity and his interaction in the material nature, and Krishna stays above that.
But he does give knowledge. He does have concern that we raise ourselves to a higher level, and therefore he says that when you get knowledge, you can rise above the ignorance that binds you to this material nature. And just like when the sun comes out, then you can see everything clearly, and you can start acting in such a way that you extricate yourself from the material world. So basically, we have free will according to how much knowledge we get. And the more knowledge that we get to be able to distinguish between what to do and what not to do, the more free we can become. And that comes from outside influence. Maya mugna jivera nahi swata krishna gyan kripaya jivera krishna veda puran. That automatically we can't come out of it, but that's why Krishna assumes the form of Veda Vyasa and gives knowledge so that we can come to the position of extricating ourselves and using our free will to get out. So use your free will in order to position yourself in Krishna consciousness. And the other side, whatever is destined to you, as far as how much happiness you're going to get, how much money you're going to get, you can be a good steward over what you get. Tena tektena bunjita. There's certain things set aside for you that'll be obvious. And take care of those things judiciously, but don't become attached to them and think that you're going to adjust your situation here in such a way that you'll just live happily ever after in the material world. Because, first of all, you won't. And second of all, that part you can't adjust. It's already allotted. Question. It's hard to see who went up first, but I think it was Sri Govinda. Okay, go ahead. We'll start this way and go across.
I just have two questions for
you. Turn the mic on.
Hare Krishna. So the first question is, I've met some people here in India also who are good Vedic scholars. They seem to know a lot about Vedas, but they're pretty confident that eating meat or non-vegetarian is okay. It's not a bad thing. And they also have an idea about Hare Krishna's or ISKCON. They tell what their philosophy is also, but they say both are all right. So why would somebody who has that scholarly understanding of Vedas would still feel that eating non-vegetarian food is okay?
Well, Krishna gives a term for this in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Aprita Jnana Asuram Bhavam Asrita. He says that there are certain scholars who are very, very intelligent, but their knowledge is stolen by illusion, by Maya. So there's a way that you can become so confident of your intelligence that you talk yourself out of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. This is mentioned in the Navadvip Mahatmya. If you see, submission and humility are mentioned by Krishna as the processes of knowledge. Amanitvam, Adamvitvam, Ahimsa Shantirajavam. These are the beginning stages in getting knowledge. And it's mentioned in the Navadvip Dhamma Mahatmya, who takes so much pride in their own intelligence, can actually avoid the mercy of Lord Nityananda, who's giving away, you know, love of God. And you become so super intelligent that you decide that, you know, it's okay to eat meat and so on and so forth. So whenever somebody's making advancement in devotional life, it's based on submission and it's based on humility. And there's a proportionate amount of humility that comes as one is advancing, and vice versa. And if it's not there, and one develops this demoniac mentality, as Krishna says, mogasha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa raksha sima surim chaiva prakriti mohinim shritaha. Those who take shelter of these kinds of views, these atheistic views that are outside the Vedas, which are the standard, that those people are baffled. Mogasha means they're baffled in their knowledge, they're baffled in their work, and they're baffled in their liberation. And so we take the standard knowledge from the Bhagavad Gita and from the Mahajans And by doing that, we follow the correct path as given by Krishna. Second question?
Second question is, if we are trying to have an event in a college, or in our college basically, and if I have to interface with these people to conduct that event, so now that difference is obviously there in my mind that this is where it is completely opposite to what I strongly believe as a devotee in ISKCON. So how to interface them, basically include them, you know. I hope you got my question.
Well, we have this prayer that we sing, that Lord Chaitanya, he ties together all the different kinds of sectarianism in the age of Kali Yuga, and he covers over all these kinds of discrepancies. And the Sankirtan movement, I pulled a quote out and put it in something the other day about how the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is meant to encompass everyone, and the flood of the Sankirtan drowns everyone, whether one be a scholar, whether one be a learned or a poor man or blind or invalid, you still get drowned. You know, it's kind of a flood that comes. And so, like, our preaching programs are not just all philosophy and intellectual. There's something people can do. You know, they learn cooking, and they'll come for the cooking class, and they may not be interested in philosophy, and then they eat prasadam, they meet devotees, and they hear the kirtan, and there's a vibration. They're getting the vibration, and they start to change. Their heart changes. And so, of course, we have to be expert in every circumstance to find out, you know, which angle people are most interested in and offer that to them in a Krishna conscious way. But in general, if you create an environment, a spiritual environment, and you invite people into it, they'll either transform and become devotees or they'll flee. And it separates people. Krishna says this in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that when my holy name is chanted, or Arjuna says it, when your holy name is chanted, some people, they rejoice and other people run. You know, the demons run away and the devotees come together. So follow the standard program, you know, and that is to pour mercy out to the innocent and avoid the envious. I'll tell you a story about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And that was that one of his disciples later told this story. The disciple, was a learned young man. And he was also a Pakka Mayavadi, and very much devoted to the Mayavad school of philosophy. But he was a very highly qualified person. Some of the preachers from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta who were going around and meeting all kinds of educated people, like you're all doing in the universities, found this young man and began preaching to him, and found that he was very qualified, except he had one fault, and that was he was a Pakka Mayavadi. But out of their compassion, they thought, how can we bring him up? We really want him to be part of this. So they went and they told their guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, that we've met this young man, very qualified, good family, highly educated, but he's a Pakka Mayavadi. So what should we do? So they had a darshan with Maharaj. So this devotee describes how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came in to meet him. He came and sat down in the room. He didn't ask him anything. He didn't talk to him in any way. He sat down and he spoke Krishna Katha, like from, you know, stories about Krishna, for about an half an hour. And then he got up and he walked out. Then this young man, he was attracted enough to come to all the programs. So he would come and he would sit in the class and he would listen to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And every time at the end, you know, question. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta ignored him for 6 months. He wouldn't take his questions. But he acknowledged that he was there hearing. And then this devotee mentioned how he was at a program of his own. And it was actually a debate with the king. He had gotten into this forum, and the king was preaching Mayavad, and this devotee started to counter his arguments. And it got to such a point that the devotee realized that he, in the debate, that he could now defeat the king. He could bring one more argument. But then he looked over and he saw the king's guards and everything, they had hands on their swords. And he thought, well, I can either lose my head or defeat the king, so I'll just let this one go. But he realized in that the mercy of hearing from Parampara, and that he had sat, he had heard, he had listened, and his heart had changed. And not only that, as Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam, this Bhagavatam will equip one to be able to preach to atheists and convert them, and Mayavadis and every other kind of vod, you know, that is out there. And that's what we deal with. Preaching is a kind of war. You don't know which side it's going to come from, and you have to equip yourself with all kinds of weapons. And as you go and preach, you'll find sometimes that, oh, I was off balance there. I remember one time I was in the Dallas airport and you know, just distributing books, minding my own business, and some guy who had obviously, you know, in some philosophy religion class, like he jumped out really quick and he started like, you know this about the Upanishads and that and this and that and then, and I wasn't ready for it. I remember I was like, what? What do I tell this guy? You know, and he walked away and I thought, oh, I better, you know, study more, you know, get more into this. And that's how preaching makes you strong. Your faith increases because you meet all these people and then you'll go home and you'll think, ah, I should have said that, you know, and I should have, and then you're like a sponge. And everything you're hearing, you know, you're open channel, so you can learn more, so you can present the full picture of Krishna. You can paint a perfect picture of, so others will get it. And that's part of the art of preaching. It gets in you. It's your 10,000 hours. You preach for 10,000 hours? Like Keshav Bharti Maharaj, expert preacher. He sat at the Soho Street Temple in London for 7 years in one room. And you see, the devotees were out on the street, and they were preaching to people up and down on the street, book distribution. People say, ah, I'm interested. So they'd bring them all home to the temple, and they'd sit them down with Keshav Bharti Maharaj. And that's all he did every day for about 8 hours a day. I don't know if he got 10,000 hours, but it must have been. Because he's really expert at talking to people, and that's what he did. He just 8 hours a day, he'd preach. And then, you know, after 7 years, you put him anywhere, and they're like, yeah, I've heard that one a million times. And you know, he has a penchant for it. So you have to develop that over time. And also, you have to discriminate for those who are, you know, if they have an edge to them. There was this man we met on the Harinam Sankirtan in Palo Alto, and he still comes. I see him every time we have a Harinam. He must live down there or something. But the first time we saw him, it must have been 3 or 4 years ago. He came by and he was angry. I was distributing books. He looked at the Harinam, looked at me. He's Indian too. And he looked in and he said, you know, this is complete nonsense. You know what you're doing here is just ridiculous. And he was angry about the whole thing. And I just treated him with kindness. And I didn't, you know, get on his case very heavily. We had a small interaction of philosophy, but I didn't push it really, really hard, and he walked away. And the second time he came back, and I just treated him with kindness, and I gave him some prasadam, and I waved to him, and this went on every time we had a Harinam. And now, when he comes over, he embraces me. He's like, how are you guys? He's brought his family over to meet us, and you know, and whenever his friends are there, and they're all out, you know, going to the restaurants and bars and stuff like that, he goes, no, come over, you got to see these guys, you know. And you can see the change of heart, and that's because of the Sankirtan, you know, the whole thing. He sees it, and there's a change that takes place in people's hearts. So be there and go on, you know, spreading the Sankirtan, and the vibration will change people.
Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna.
Well, like, I just wanted to share something that I read in recently about biography of Narottam Das Thakur Shyamananda Srinivas Acharya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted these devotees to distribute love of God and Godades, like in West Bengal, because like Rupa Goswami and many devotees was sent to Vrindavan, and they wrote the books. Rupa Goswami wrote many books, and so many books were there. So all the three devotees, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, and Shyamananda Pandit, they were studying under Jiva Goswami, and they had like their spiritual master. So later on, the cart was made of all these books, and it was to be sent to Goda, like with all the three devotees. So that was very interesting. I found like the books was the means of transporting mercy to West Bengal when it was actually was going down there. And when the card was going through it was Vishnupura, some city or some king was there who was encouraging the courts and everything. Some astrologer told the king that there's a card coming, it has a great wealth in this card, and you should steal it and you should keep it. So he sent out 200 armed men to get the books and told them not to harm anyone. So they took the books, and of course, when Narottam Das Thakur and other devotees, they saw that they were very, in a very much suffering about, like, and they were praying to Rupa Goswami, like, the books was closed, we are in a trouble. So that was very intense, and Srinivasa Acharya later on was wandering around trying to find those books, and he was teaching Sanskrit to one student, and that student was going to the court of this king, and the king's priest actually was teaching Bhagavatam, but the king priest was not knowing about Bhagavatam, real Bhagavatam in a sense. So when Srinivasa Acharya saw that assembly and told that the Bhagavatam real, like how to explain Bhagavatam, and king got really inspired by that, and he told the priest to study Bhagavatam under him, and later on through the conversation king wanted to know more about Srinivasa Acharya, and Srinivasa Acharya told that actually I was coming with my two friends from Vrindavan, and we had the card and he was lost, and the king knew that I took the books and I have so later on, so that whole episode was very interesting. So the book distribution started there.
Yes, and actually the king's name is Birambir, right? And so one very important part of the story is that when the books were first stolen, they stole them in the middle of the night, and then when they woke up, they were gone. So then Srinivas went and he found out what happened. The king revealed that he was expecting some treasure of a different kind, because the astrologer told him. He opened up that package and he saw the books. And one side he was disappointed because he thought, where's the gold and everything like that. But it's described there that when he saw the handwriting of Rupa Goswami that were on the palm leaves, something in his heart changed. And I remember when I read that passage that Prabhupada said, if they read one word, one line, that they can be turned. And so he had an epiphany when he saw that, and his heart changed because he actually saw the book, that this is, wow, this is something, you know, beyond what I could imagine. I don't know what it is yet, but I always remember that that thing, you know, that second moment when he sees it and he becomes transformed. Such a beautiful story. Thank you. Okay, last one, and then we're going to have Guru Puja.
I have a question on violence. Srila Prabhupada described in his books that violence, I'm not talking about general violence, but violence in a different sense. If one is in a position to help another person, to spiritually uplift him, but he doesn't do that, and that is described as violence. And another form of violence that I can think of is if one does some activity that makes the other person to go down in his practice of spiritual sadhana, that is also a violence. This is what I'm thinking about myself. I don't know whether I read it somewhere or not. Now, the question I have is, let's say in a kind of temple atmosphere where people are interacting with each other, and we have like A and B, and for some activities done by A, for example, the B was, let's say he was depressed and he lost interest in doing some things, and he may actually go down in his spiritual sadhana, and but the fault could be with anyone, either A or B, actual fault. But my question is, no matter whose fault it is, because the B has ultimately suffered because of that, can it be considered as a violence done on B from A, no matter whose fault it actually is?
Not really. In this context, we're talking about social intercourse. And when we have a community and devotees are working together to please Krishna, there's going to be some friction, guaranteed, because people have different psychophysiological natures and they have different ways of thinking about things. And Prabhupada didn't give a lot of importance to that in the sense, well, I'll give you an example. When one of when Atreya Rishi Prabhu, who was a very soft-hearted devotee, he was also a leader and a manager, he was at GBC, and he became very disturbed that a lot of the other leaders were fighting with each other. There's a lot of competition, a lot of fighting, especially back then. Not as much now as at all, because people have matured. But young men in charge of many different projects, things like that, fighting, disagreements. So he wrote to Prabhupada, you know, saying, what kind of spiritual movement is this if the leaders can't even stop fighting and such? And Prabhupada wrote back a letter saying, this is due to personalism. And he said, this is, don't expect utopia. And he said, even in the spiritual world, this goes on. Because of personalism. You know, there are camps. There's the Chandravali camp, the Radharani camp, and there's a kind of a, you know, there, you know, you see these sometimes, you know. On the morning walks, you know, with Prabhupada, sometimes devotees were, you know, there was, no one said much, you know, but there was like, you know, there was a lot of like jockeying for getting closer. Even I remember when we drove with Prabhupada to the monuments in Washington, D.C., and there was about 10 cars behind him. You know, devotees were like, you know, try to edge each other out. But these are not considered, you know, in the course of doing your service, one person does it this way, another person does it that way. One person dresses the deity this way, one does it that way. You know, there's these are all individual traits, and we have to learn to be tolerant. You know, especially when we're around devotees, this is what a community is. It's, you know, we come together for these purposes, and it's not violence, but it's just a difference of opinion in the way of doing it. And around Vaishnavas, we have to be very trained and careful in etiquette so that, you know, we respectfully call everyone Prabhu. It means something. It means, you know, master. And it also means it's the attitude. If someone gives us a problem, okay, tempers might flare. And I might feel upset for a couple weeks. Okay, possible. But then you go back. Your hearts are softened. You go back, okay, Prabhu. Please set my bases. I felt like this about you. Now I want to alleviate my offense. Or even if they won't talk to you, you can go do service. This is one of the ways to alleviate an offense. If the person won't even talk to you, you can go serve them without them knowing it. You know, move their shoes for them or do whatever. You know, drop stuff off at their house. You can be anonymous if you have to. But this is what Vaishnavas do. You know, they avoid offenses to other Vaishnavas very carefully like that. So we shouldn't take it that somebody's, you know, perpetrating violence because they do service in a certain way or in another way. And there's a good story about how to handle with inflamed situations. In the Rath Yatra, Lord Chaitanya was dancing and everyone wanted to see it. And Srinivasacharya was watching intently, and behind him was standing the king, Prachaparudra. Next to him was Harichandana, who was kind of watching out for the king in the crowd. And the crowds, if you've ever been to the Puri Rath Yatra, it's intense. And so Srinivas was blocking the view of the king, and he didn't know it. He was just in samadhi on Lord Chaitanya's dancing. And so Chandanacharya was tapping, you know, kind of pushing, hey. And, you know, it's hot, and the festival's going on, and he's trying to see the Lord. And finally he turned around, you know, his hand, smack. And Harichandana was about to say, and Maharaj Prachaparudra just said, I'm not so fortunate. You're fortunate. You were touched by a pure devotee. So we should feel like, you know, if there's a slap, if there's something, then we should take it that, okay, you know, we're amongst pure devotees. There's some difference going on. It's not some philosophical principle where there was some violence and someone made someone else go down. That requires a lot more what we call from the heart intention. You know, when somebody's actually envious and they really fall off the other end and start doing things which are, you know, meant to disturb the faith of another. that's in the realm of, it gets in the realm of aparads. Yeah.
So, yes, actually, you know, it's partly, you know, some of these things, for example, some devotees may even stop coming to the temple, and some may start losing interest in any of the services that we do here, and they just go and live independently. Certainly, the fault could be on their side, but the end result is they are going down in their spiritual path because of something that might have happened. So even if the fault is with the person who is actually going down, can that still be considered as a violence? Because it looks to me that it is a violence because ultimately one soul has a facility to go up, but he's actually going down because of something that has happened.
It really depends on the situation. And there are, you know, cases. We observed how Srila Prabhupada dealt with community and with, you know, pushing on the Krishna consciousness movement. And you can see sometimes he dealt with certain individuals who, in a way that seemed very extreme. So did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which ultimately was for their benefit. You know, there were cases where he asked people to personally asked people to go out of the movement. You know, for certain philosophical reasons, he said, leave right now. He sent three leaders of the movement packing in the middle of the night, practically. He said, I want you out now. And it was for, you know, practically one statement that they made that was so philosophically disturbing to the rest of the community that Prabhupada personally got involved in it. He called the Detroit Temple to find out, to talk and say, what did they say? What happened? And he said, they must leave right away. Later they came back. But they, you know, that kind of separation is, it's not that that's also not mercy. You know, it's, there's a way in which, you know, it's a voluntary process of Krishna consciousness. And communities and have their own, you know, we have boundaries. There are boundaries everywhere. There are boundaries to the spiritual world. What's the Viraja River? It's a boundary. Read the Brahma Samhita and you'll see what is the boundary. There's swords and tridents and keeping people out for any number of reasons that aren't in harmony with what's going on behind that boundary wall. Varnashram is a kind of a boundary. Because there are boundaries, it doesn't mean there's not mercy. And in any community, there has to be a clear sense of what's in harmony. If somebody's in harmony with the mood and mission, then it's a natural thing that they'll want to, that they'll be there and they'll want to gravitate toward that. If someone develops a feeling in their heart that is against the mood and mission, then they'll separate themselves. And why not? Because there are lots of different ways to do things and of ways of looking at things, and therefore there are many different movements and groups. But in any particular group, one should be in harmony with the mood and mission and be very careful, you know, to observe that. Otherwise, it becomes, the vibration becomes detrimental to everybody else, and that's what a community is. I mean, there is an accommodation, but there are boundaries, and that's also mercy.
Thank you, that's all.
Okay, Hare Krishna. So let's have the Guru Puja. And after Guru Puja, we'll have Prasadam. And after that, I'm going on Sankirtan. I don't care what anybody says. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.